Call for Action presents Of Consuming Interest, a public service show that discusses scams, deceptive offers, and other consumer concerns. Here's the director of WUSA 9 Call for Action and your host, Shirley Rooker.
The national debt is soaring. The stock market seems to be on a roller coaster. Foreign countries are in financial trouble. Some of our own cities are on the verge or have declared bankruptcy. What does it all mean for you as an investor? Well, we're going to get some answers to those questions, as well as what if the Fed raises the interest rates? Well, my guest is Joe Hemsley. He's a certified financial planner with Ameriprise. Joe, welcome to Of Consuming Interest.
Thank you, Shirley. It's great to be back on your show.
And you know, all of the things that I just brought up, they kind of give me chills thinking about them if I sit down and really think about them. Maybe it's because I don't really understand the ramifications on me, my life as an investor, my future, the future of my country. So all those big issues, we have some important things to talk about today, Joe. Where do we start? Which one of those items would you say is of the biggest concern to consumers, or is there something else to investors, I should say?
I think it may be sort of all of the above.
Okay, unfortunately.
With sort of a wrapper of perspective on top of that. I think consumers and folks preparing for their financial future, the biggest challenge is putting all these things in perspective. But it's a great question as to which one has the most impact. And I think that changes back and forth. So,
depending on the situation and what's going on.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, let's just start with one of them, the national debt. Now, somehow or the other, I live within a budget. The government cannot seem to live within a budget. And consequently, our debt is into the, what, $18 trillion or something right now? And I can't even imagine how much money that is. What impact does that have on us as investors? Should we be worried? Are there particular ways of making investments to protect ourselves from this soaring national debt? Put it in perspective for me, Joe.
Well, it's a great question. I think that the markets have slowly gotten used to the fact that the debt issue is not going to be resolved, or at least even improved, perhaps, in the near term. And so over the last several years, one of the negative factors in different areas of the marketplace has been that idea that we're going to spend beyond our means, and that we know that ultimately there has to be a comeuppance for that, and that affects asset prices. Now, almost perversely, when you have extra money flowing through the system, it can actually temporarily support certain asset prices like real estate and equities and so forth. So it's almost like a drug that we can't wean ourselves off of, and usually that doesn't turn out very well.
In the long run,
we
can't become addicted.
It may actually prop things up.
Mm-hmm. So right now. You're saying it's not the major concern because we haven't run up against the wall and we haven't had to start tightening our belt and doing the things that we may have to do in the future. I mean, the politicians seem to be very gifted at passing this on to the next generation of politicians. So consequently, we're living with a debt that is just incredible. Watching the clock, the debt clock, is enough to scare the wits out of you. Okay, so right now, let's look at the short-term investments. Don't worry about the national debt. What are the things that we should, let's suppose that I'm a young person getting ready, I'm starting to save money, I want to take that money, I want to invest it somewhere. Now, I know that that I need to sit down and calculate what kind of risks I'm willing to take with that money, but where do I look? Do I look to the stock market? Do I look to investing in real estate? Do I look to putting my money in gold and silver? Or how would you recommend to a young person, let's say someone in there, one of the millennials, starting out right now, what would you tell them to do with their money?
You know, we would figure out what it is they're trying to accomplish. So, for example, we know that everybody has a goal of retirement, so that's sort of automatic.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you're a younger person, you may have some other intermediate goals prior to that.
Kids,
maybe
college.
Purchasing a mm-hmm. home, a larger home, paying off some college debt, starting a business, saving for graduate school. getting married, starting a family, and on and on. And we would associate dollar amounts approximate for each one of those pieces and also look at the timing. Then what we'd want to do is allocate our capital according to the time frames for each of those pieces. So if we think we have a need coming up in a year or two, we'd be very, very cautious with what we do with those monies. As we balance that with still wanting to save something towards retirement, even from a relatively early age, we'd be more forward-thinking on that in that regard and think in terms of accepting some of the volatility and some of the risk and associating those dollars with assets that have the potential for a much greater return.
So getting on the roller coaster, taking a few Dramamine to keep the nausea down and go with it.
If you focus on time horizon and you almost look out, the roller coaster ride should not feel as severe.
Well, you know, that's what they say when you're on a ship and there's heavy waves. Look at the horizon. I never thought about putting that philosophy into use in terms of investing, but it does make sense.
And it really continues into middle age and older ages where the time frames shift. At some point later in life, sometimes folks are fortunate enough to think that they may never run out of resources. And if they are in a situation like that, they start thinking in terms of, well, maybe I leave some resources for the next generation.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're able to think along those lines, that extends the time frame again. And it means maybe not all the money is sitting under the mattress, and they can accept a little bit of a roller coaster with some of their resources.
Okay. So that makes sense. And the younger you are, I suppose, the greater tolerance you have for risk because you have a larger earning life ahead of you. So
you have a greater tolerance for risk for the goals that are longer term in nature.
Right. I guess I should tell our listeners that you are my financial planner and you do the financial advice for Call for Action, pro bono, I might add. Thank you very much, Joe. But to me, your philosophy makes a lot of sense depending on my age and what I've got and how I can risk it and my goals. So what you're really saying is that a young person has to sit down. They have to do some calculating. What do you want to be? Do you want to say, where do you think you'll be in 20 years? Now, that's hard in today's world and in today's job market. But I guess what you do is you set goals for yourself and then try to achieve those goals. So for the younger person, then you're looking at a diversity of investments in what you're saying. What about going into, would this be into the stock market? Would this be into real estate? Would this be into mutual funds? What about gold and silver? How do they all fit into that picture? And before you answer that, let's just take a brief pause here to let our listeners know they're tuned into Of Consuming Interest. I'm Shirley Rooker. My guest is Joe Hemsley. He's a certified financial planner with Ameriprise. And we're talking about how to keep your money and keep your sanity during the economic times in which we live. So what about it, Joe? How do you start this? How do you start this investment planning? Where do you go?
Well, in terms of the solutions for each time frame, you mentioned a few broad types. Yes, indeed, ownership-related assets would correlate the best with longer-term time horizons. So if you own pieces of companies, shares of stock, if you own real estate or parts of real estate, rental real estate, commercial real estate through stocks that own that, those types of assets tend to perform best over long periods of time relative to fixed income types of assets. Certainly with interest rates on the lower end these days, it would point us more towards equities over a long-term time horizon, perhaps now as much as ever. With that said, that we're still likely susceptible to some downswings in the near term. But if I was starting out that part of the planning for a younger person, then we'd want to focus on ownership types of assets. You mentioned gold and certain types of commodities may work as a diversifier.
We probably wouldn't use them as a primary
asset. over the long term. We might use them as a more of a diversifier on a lesser basis.
As part of a portfolio that includes
part of the portfolio.
Well, I know that's what you've always told our listeners, is that, you know, diversity is really important here, because then you're not putting all your eggs in one basket. I'm always amazed that people tell to me, oh, I'm buying this stock today, I'll sell it tomorrow, I'm buying this. And that's not me. My stomach couldn't stand that. That would be too much of a roller coaster. But to each his own. And I know some people use online trading and all of this sort of stuff. That's not for me. I want a long range plan, and I want to set it down, and I want to stick with it. So that makes me comfortable. I guess it depends, as you've said, what makes people comfortable. Well, now how, when we're doing all of this calculations, how do we factor in the fact that so many foreign countries are bankrupt, on the verge of bankrupt, having severe civil unrest? There's so much going on in the world right now that makes it a rather tumultuous place. How do you figure that into looking at where you invest? Does this mean you would do less investments that involve foreign companies? Or how do you put that into the equation?
Well, we still want to really, with every American that has been able to set aside some resources for their goals, really should consider keeping some portion of those resources in instruments that are exposed to the global markets and not just the U.S. So, for starters, just in thinking in terms of currency, you know, the U.S. dollar has done pretty well the last few years, but it does go in cycles over time. So as a U.S.-based person, where your income otherwise is denominated in U.S. dollars, and if you own a house, its value is denominated in U.S. dollars, and if you maybe you're fortunate enough to have a pension, it'll be paid in U.S. dollars. You don't want to have everything just exposed to the U.S. dollar, because sometimes it's not moving in the right direction. So for that reason, and just for because different parts of the world are growing at different rates, we wouldn't want to have all our money as Americans just in the U.S. Recently, the last few years, the U.S. markets are generally doing quite well relative to the others. That may continue for a bit, but it's awfully hard to know where the pivot points will be. So, we would continue to maintain some portion of the different types of assets you might want to own overseas, and actually allow some of them to be denominated in non-U.S. currencies for additional protection and diversification.
So now the Chinese market, that seems to be an emerging market. Where is Japan these days? We don't hear that much about, at least I don't, about Japan. I'm always hearing about China, and China's buying this and China's buying that, and they're making these investments, et cetera.
Japan has made an effort to, for lack of a better phrase, pump a lot of money into their economic and financial systems. And as a result, it's attracted investors at points in time. The challenge with Japan is they have some overlaying issues and circumstances that really haven't gone away. It's an aging country. It's a country without much immigration. So there's broad challenges there. But in the short run, there have been particular industries within China that have done relatively well compared to those industries in other countries that have created some opportunities for investors. But there really is a certain level of volatility that's associated with investing in Japan, where you're kind of guessing what the government's going to do next and, frankly, who's going to comprise the government next.
Mm-hmm.
But there's been a leadership there the last period of time that is taking a more aggressive approach to trying to revive the economy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, it creates winners and losers along the way. But I think the reason you don't hear as much about Japan as perhaps we did back in the 1980s is, you know, they just aren't set up for growth quite as much as some other places are that have truly emerged since the 1980s.
Well, now, besides China, which has its ups and downs, but it does seem, people seem to consider that it's a forward-moving country in terms of the economy and their investments and so on. and just based on the sheer size of their population. What other areas, what other countries in the world do you see as the forward-looking in the financial world?
Well, so each area I'm about to mention itself may seem somewhat modest in terms of its impact. So the thing to keep in mind is the sort of the aggregate force that all of these areas may create in a positive direction. So we can look at some of the other parts of Asia that are not China and Japan. We can look at some of the Eastern European countries, South American countries, African nations, even some places in the Middle East. You add up various pockets of growth among smaller economies, and it adds up to enough force to have an overall favorable impact on the global economy. And really assimilating technology into those places is a major positive force that occurs. And some places happen to be stabilizing somewhat politically, which also helps quite a bit.
Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned technology. Let's just take a brief pause here to let our listeners know they're tuned in to Of Consuming Interest. I'm Shirley Rooker. My guest is Joe Hemsley. He's a certified financial planner with Ameriprise, and we're talking about the world's economy. Okay, so in terms of these countries and looking at them, the consumer is very dependent on their financial advisor, I would think. Most consumers are. Most would-be investors are. I know I certainly am. I'm not conversant with what's going on in these countries and what I invest in here, how it ends up there. What about the American countries that are moving to, that are taking their jobs out of this country again? There's been a good bit about that because of our tax structure. Do you see that changing and that having a positive impact if, in fact, we were to get a reduction in the corporate tax structure?
So I personally tend to view that process as something that moves in cycles,
mm-hmm.
where the more expensive it gets to house labor in the United States, the greater the pressure there is to reduce that cost by finding somewhere else where labor will be less expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And then over time, things get adjusted. Maybe regulations get eased a little bit. Incentives are given in particular states, in the United States. And encouragement is given to businesses to keep labor on American soil. And things swing back and jobs domestically increase. And, you know, we go through these cycles. Some industries have their own cycles, but overall, we had been for a bit in a phase where companies were starting to more significantly insource again, bring workers back.
Yes, that trend was happening, but from what I'm hearing now, it's starting to reverse itself again.
I think that's fair. And that here again, it's the trends that led to it appearing less expensive. You know, energy costs to bring products back into the U.S. were falling, making it less expensive to. When they were rising,
mm-hmm.
it was making it more expensive to bring products back.
Right.
Easier to just keep people here, produce things here. Things go back and forth on that front.
Right. Let's segue.
And all the more reason I might add as to why. You know, we want to consider diversifying the portfolio itself globally because these trends tend to move around.
They move around. Let's talk about various sectors of the economy, such as the technology sector, the energy sector, and so on. Where do you see the forward-looking movement and investment in those areas? If I were to come to you and say, Joe, I want to invest some money, what industry should I look at?
Well, it's interesting. You know, we think in terms of what industry is going to grow the most, and then we also think in terms of what industry is going to grow the most where the market hasn't figured that out yet.
So where I can get in early?
we can say, well, clearly technology companies are growing on average more rapidly than most other industries. But if the market already knows that, that means that it may or may not be the best place to invest. Mm-hmm. What we've seen is that healthcare and biotech have been industries where the marketplace at times is having a hard time keeping up with the potential earnings that are in those areas, plus that sort of the constant fear of what does the federal government do next to negatively impact some of those areas. And then sometimes when the impact appears either not as bad as it may have been, or that the, in essence, winners are selected because of the way they do things, and you invest in those winners, you do okay, even when the government's involved sort of disrupting the supply and demand process.
But do you pick out a particular industry that you mentioned, the healthcare industry? Do you think, I mean, if someone is out there and they just think, well, this is an industry I'm interested in, where do you see the most? Do you see the technology, which has always seemed to be, well, it's had its ups and downs, but it has always seemed to be an area that is forward moving?
What I've observed in the last few years is what's less common is somebody saying proactively, let's focus on this industry, but rather a sensitivity to particular industries where may say, do we have to invest in that area?
Don't put me in that one.
It's the financial sector.
It's
still the fallout, psychological fallout from the, from the Great Recession.
I understand. Now, let me do one final question. We only have a couple minutes. What's going to happen if the Fed does raise the interest rates? What parts of our economy is that going to affect the most or the least or whatever?
Well, basically the cost of money affects different industries in different ways. In terms of the overall economy, ironically, it may actually help because interest rates being artificially as low as they are on a short-term basis, with basically the central bank suppressing them, doesn't send a very positive signal to those that would want to take economic risk, that with all their purview, they're seeing growth not being that great and they feel obligated to keep rates at nothing. So if they actually started raising them a bit, it actually may, while it may cause certain industries to have to pay more to borrow eventually, it actually could create an even greater positive in less fear and a little more confidence mm-hmm. about where the economy is going. So that's where all the speculation is around each time the Federal Reserve announces whether rates are rising or not. You know, there's always the, okay, what's the reaction going to be over the next 24 hours? But it's more, what's the longer-term reaction?
Right.
Is the psychology going to be more powerful than a little bit extra borrowing cost? I think the conventional wisdom is it will be.
Mm-hmm.
There are still some loud voices saying, look, with an economy that's as anemically growing as this one is in the United States, we just need to keep pumping as much medicine in as we can. But I think more broadly, that's not the you know, that's not the main point of view these days.
Okay, so you think there may be some changes coming? Well, it's been interesting, and I don't know whether to go home and feel comforted or not, Joe. So at any rate, there's so much to consider, and I guess the real word to investors is to just be sure you know what you're doing and you know what your risk is. Your exposure and your ability to withstand risk.
Yeah, Joe, identify.
Yeah, I'm sorry. We're running out of time. Thank you so much for joining us. We've been talking with Joe Hemsley. He's a certified financial planner. He is with Ameriprise, and we're thank you for joining us. You've been listening to Of Consuming Interest right here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, and you can reach me at Shirley@callforaction.org. That's Shirley@callforaction.org. I'm Shirley Rooker. Thank you.
Of Consuming Interest is a public service program presented by WUSA 9 Call for Action, hosted by Shirley Rooker. Call for Action is an international nonprofit network of hotlines which offer free and confidential assistance. If you have a complaint, contact Call for Action at 301-652-HELP. That's 301-652-HELP.